Hey, this is Roy Richardson, and welcome to the One-Off Tech Podcast. Wow, so we took a big break, and I never thought the podcast would ever come back. I mean, seriously, I never thought the podcast would come back. But folks kept downloading the podcast, and the podcasting, you know, podcasting was my first love, and I have been running in so many different directions at once, looking for a direction to share my creativity, and how many of you stifle your inner creative person and it begins to make you crazy? It's as if you're filling up a tea kettle and suddenly the kettle just starts to boil. And if you don't release the pressure, it makes a huge mess. Well, that's what happened to me. I was running in so many different directions with my creativity, and I was trying to figure out what do I want to do. And I've been looking at building up my YouTube channel, and I've been looking at other facets of my creative self. And I thought, well, wow, I mean, why are people still downloading my podcast? What's going on with that? It's been a year or more since I've recorded one, you know, any episodes. And so here we are. It's season 3. This is episode 1. And again, thank you to all of my faithful listeners. I am so humbled by your support. Hey, this is Roy Richardson, and this is the One-Off Tech Podcast. Today's topic is, what the heck is Bitcoin and why is it exploding in popularity all of a sudden? Well, in the tech community, it actually was slow simmering for quite some time, and we've been waiting for mainstream acceptance so that this is what is happening now. It's gaining mainstream acceptance. In the early days when Bitcoin came to be, it felt like it couldn't possibly exist and that governments would take over or they would outlaw it. In fact, in China, they did. They outlawed using electronic currencies. So let's talk. What is Bitcoin? Well, first of all, it's not paper currency. Okay, that isn't exactly true, but mostly true. It's essentially completely electronic currency that is not centrally managed. So in a world where most of our money is managed by central banks that control the world's currency, Bitcoin was originally an attempt to decentralize control of currency. In the early days, a group of hackers, the good kind mostly, worked on creating an electronic currency, and a person named Satoshi Nakamoto, who may or may not be a real person, but you know, no one really seems to know. Back in 2008, Bitcoin.org was formed. And by 2009, a Bitcoin network made up of open source software was formed. And the key to this currency is cryptography. The communications for this are all encrypted using 256-bit encryption keys. So it would take perhaps millions of years to break that encryption. So over the years since it started, the value of Bitcoin has fluctuated like just crazy. I mean, just insane, crazy amounts of fluctuation in all these years. And recently, it's gotten close to 50,000. And by the time you listen to this podcast, it may even be close to 75,000 or more. So what is all this Bitcoin mining stuff? So in order for the magic to happen, all the Bitcoin miners have to install the entire transactions database. So every time someone does a transaction, I'm selling to someone, or someone is selling me something, and I'm paying a Bitcoin. This gets recorded to a transaction database that back in 2018 was 150 gig, according to Wikipedia. So by now, with the rise in popularity, This has to be tracking close to 500 plus gig, if not a terabyte. And as every mining rig has to have a copy of this database, and each has to calculate the transactions through a process of encrypting and decrypting before transaction officially take place, the chain of blocks that makes up this is called blockchain. So as all the chains of transactions link all the way back to the beginning of Bitcoin, and that's actually called like the Genesis block. So I think of it as like a big family tree. So everything links back to the original parent of this. Or think of it as cell division. So you got one cell, it becomes two, it becomes four, it becomes six, just keeps going like that. And so that blockchain links all the way back to the very beginning. And this hashed blocks have to be number crunched. And folks figured out long ago that graphics processors are great at math. So you got like your GeForce cards and you know, just all these different makers of cards that make graphics cards. And so they figured out how to take banks of graphics cards to do the processing of these Bitcoin blockchains. And one of the big problems is that as Bitcoin gets bigger and bigger, graphics cards are power hogs. They use a lot of wattage and they require a lot of cooling. So think of rooms full of graphics cards and huge air conditioners trying to keep them cool so they can process more efficiently. I mean, think of having a room full of hair dryers. So the room is just slammed full of these 1500 watt hair dryers. And every single one of them has to run at the same time. You got to think the room is going to get hot. And so you have to have some way to dissipate the air that's in that room. And heat and computers are bad for each other. So what the heck does this have to do with today? So you're probably asking yourself, do I need to buy Bitcoin? Well, before 2021, you only need to worry about Bitcoin if you were ransomware or intended to pay the hackers, or you had a sense of adventure, or you were a techie type person or a day trader type, because trading in Bitcoin is speculative. It is like the stock market, but unlike the stock market where you can do some research on the companies and attempt to make an informed decision on whether you should invest in a company or not, even so, the stock market can have bad days. I mean, multiple bad days or even bad years. So you could have a company that's way at the top and all of a sudden it just bottoms out and you've lost all the money that you've invested in stocks in that company. But Bitcoin is even more speculative. I mean, as you can see, it can go from $50,000 one day and drop by thousands and thousands the next. And because it's so volatile, it's hard to buy it when it's low unless you joined in the early days. But the hype is so big, it is so easy to have FOMO, you know, fear of missing out. If you want to buy Bitcoin, you have so many options, but where's a place you can trust? So there is Coinbase, which is moving quickly to become the place to buy Bitcoin, but PayPal is moving in that direction as well. There are bunches of others out there, but those are two that I have dealt with that I have faith in. And Coinbase is about to do an IPO, so it's about to go insane and become a publicly traded company. So either platform lets you buy Bitcoin. The catch right now is that you can buy and sell Bitcoin on these exchanges, but it's a challenge to actually spend it on anything. You can buy and sell Bitcoin, but where can I go and buy a Big Mac with my Bitcoin? And that is changing fast. Already you can use Bitcoin to pay for your Tesla, assuming you have enough money to actually buy a Tesla. I'm not worthy. I don't have that kind of money. But the other part of that is, can you afford to buy Bitcoin? If you're taking away from your family, or if you're taking away from paying your rent or mortgage or putting food on your table or keeping the lights on, you should not buy Bitcoin. But if you have some money that can truly be called disposable income, then you can. Think of Bitcoin like a slot machine. Before you play a slot machine, you really should decide, how much can I afford to lose? Let's say it's $20. So you play 20 in the slot machine, and if you make money, great. But if you lose your original 20, then you're done. And you didn't lose something you couldn't afford to lose because you had your mindset what you can do. So my plan perhaps could be for Bitcoin, invest $20 every 2 weeks. I might get spare $20 or don't. Right now, it's a hot thing for now. But who wants to own a bunch of a thing that is no longer the hot thing when it's over? Unlike, say, Pokemon cards, you're buying something that is made of ones and zeros. It's binary. It's like when you play in video games and you're buying armor for your character and you have to pay real cash for that. Well, if the game goes defunct, that money's gone. My kids have spent so much money on Minecraft mods, and then the companies that are hosting those mods go away and they can't access them anymore. That money is gone. Well, Bitcoin is like that, in that if it should go belly up, you lose all that money. So you can't afford to spend money that you can't afford. If you decide to buy Bitcoin or Dogecoin, there's a bunch of different cryptocurrencies right now. You need to make sure that you secure it well, too. You need a really complex password. You need a minimum two-factor authentication. And if you really go big on this, then you need some sort of hardware-based way to keep cryptocurrency. That may be a little too paranoid at first, but if you go big, you will need to take that into account. Hackers could compromise your account and take over your currency. So be safe out there. And now, Chapter 2. Let's talk about this week in tech news. So Facebook and Apple are fighting it out over your digital soul. And this fight is for your privacy. Apple says that they're going to force applications to ask you to give up your information, as opposed to now where they don't ask for permission to access your data. And Facebook says that Apple's just doing this to force everybody to go to a subscription model, where in order to get your data, that you have to buy a subscription to an app and agree to give your data over, and so Apple would make money, because Apple takes a 30% cut of every application that is on their website. So for example, the reason you can't buy stuff through an Amazon app on an iPhone is because Apple would take a 30% cut. However, there are lots of apps where you buy a subscription, or you pay for a game, or you buy in-app purchases, and Apple gets a 30% cut of all of these. So Epic Games has been suing Apple because of this, because they don't want to pay that kind of money. And small publishers that don't make a lot of money have also been fussing and saying, hey, your walled garden is killing us. We don't want to pay 30%. So Apple said for companies that make less than $1 million, they only have to pay 10%. So if you're wondering why Apple is a multi-billion dollar company, it's because of all the apps that you've been buying, and Apple got a 30% stake in it, and they got a 30% stake every time you bought an in-purchase app. Facebook, on the other hand, is free. But as we talked about on this show before, free means that you are the product. So are you willing to continue to give up personal information, personally identifiable information about yourself, so that Facebook will continue to give you whatever benefits you're getting from Facebook? And what benefits do you get from Facebook? An interesting experiment in that would be what's been happening in Australia. So the Australia legal system has been pushing the concept that Google and Facebook were killing newspaper publishers because they were publishing their content for free. If you go to news.google.com or you look at news articles from links on Facebook, Google nor Facebook are paying any money for those links. However, lots of newspapers, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, many papers in Australia have a paywall. So you're only getting a subset of the news. And I would argue that their links on the website take you to their news site, and then you have to make a determination whether you want to buy the news or not, if you want to subscribe to those newspapers to get more information. But the Australian government saw it differently. They felt like Facebook and Google should be paying these news sites in order to publish links. So Facebook and Google both threatened to just ignore Australia media completely. In the end, though, Google gave in and paid a price in order to feature Australian news sources on news.google.com. But Facebook said no. And so for several days, there was no news on the Australian Facebook sites. So if you were in Australia and you visited Facebook, you saw status updates from friends and you didn't see news links. And it was like the old days of Facebook, back when people used to publish links like, "Hey, I'm going to go take a shower," or "Hey, I just cut my grass," or "Hey, baby just had her first steps," or "Baby's eating solid food now." And the point being is that the Facebook that you used to know and love hasn't existed for quite some time. I'm assuming that status updates from friends and family was what drew you to Facebook to start with, to post photos and say, "Hey, look at me. Here are the great things that happened in my life." Admittedly, we all did a jaded version of our lives where we only showed the good things that happened in our lives. But it made Facebook a fun place to be there for a while. And Australia, for a brief period of time, got to enjoy Facebook as it once was. And now, Facebook has given in and negotiated a deal and is paying something to the Australian media. Now, Rupert Murdoch owns a lot of the media in Australia, and it can be argued that he was trying to get the government all along to be the strong arm to get, you know, royalties coming to him in order to publish that content. So, should news be free? That's another topic for another day. You have to pay money in order to get good news, and those ways of getting that news is through advertisements. And I would have argued that Google and Facebook linking to those news sites brought them traffic that they didn't have otherwise. But sometimes all the news we read was what we saw on Facebook or Google, and we didn't bother to click past the headline. And that is a disappointing part. That means that our news agencies out there weren't getting the full story to us, because we only work in 3-second increments now. We have the shortest of attention spans, or we only accept the bullet points and the clickbait, and we don't want the full story. So we miss out so much on all so much truth there that you could see. So who really owns the news, and who really owns your digital soul? That's a funny puzzle, isn't it? What do we do in this day and age where news and the truth are hard to come by? There's so much news now that's not true, and we went through a long news cycle of fake news and news that pulled toward a left or a right or a medium, a moderate in the middle, and it was very hard to tell what the truth was anymore. And some of our favorite news sources, it became challenging. And then still others made it very clear that they were pulling to the left or to the right. And you didn't really have a chance to get the truth because it was so tainted by the slant. The most trusted news source these days, according to surveys, is the Associated Press. Supposedly, the Associated Press is the most unbiased news out there. And so for a bit, I tried to read the Associated Press, but it lacked color. It didn't have any, you know, opinions and such. So is the news now just opinions? Have we been trained so much so that we no longer just want to have our news? We want somebody to digest it for us and give it to us in little bits. I mean, it's kind of like the bird that feeds her babies. She chews up the food and then spits it down their throats, and it's partially digested, and so they get the nutrients, but they didn't have to go through any of the effort to obtain the news. So, let's roll all the way back. Is Apple just building the walled garden and pushing the idea of privacy to try to make more money? Or do we legitimately care about our privacy and we want perhaps even to pay to have some privacy? For example, our medical records. We want them as hidden as possible. We want our thought processes at times hidden as well. So maybe we want Apple to protect us. Or maybe we want Facebook to just respect our privacy a little more. Facebook argues that without ads that are tailored specifically to us, that people that use Facebook, mainly advertisers, will have a hard time reaching their preferred audience. That would be the folks with money. And they are having small businesses go and do speeches and commercials to talk about how advertising on Facebook and pinpointing people exactly for their faith or their age or their gender or political leanings makes it difficult to spot the audience in which you want to advertise to so that your ad dollars go further. I leave you to decide that. I have my opinion, but you need to decide for yourself. Do you want to give away pieces of your privacy? And again, like I've said always, is if you're getting it for free, you are the product.
Chapter 3.
Next up, I want to talk about Zoom. How many of us spend all day in Zoom meetings? I have had days where I spent hours upon hours upon hours upon hours. Well, many days I spent hours upon hours and hours in one Zoom call to the next. And so we're slowly getting what they call Zoom fatigue. I've had a day where I've done a WebEx, a JoinMe, multiple Zooms, and a couple of team meetings all in one day. I have also had Zoom calls that have lasted 24 hours because of a crisis at work that involved all hands on deck, and we literally kept the conversation going for hours upon hours in a Zoom meeting in order to try to resolve the issue. And it got old. It got very old. And so scientists have been studying kind of the Zoom fatigue and have come up with many ideas on why it drags you down so much. It's that constant having to look at other people the whole time. And so one scientist argues that we should just do away the video part of our Zoom calls and just take advantage of it as a sharing medium and a way to communicate in a group. And I admit that lots of times now I have meetings and I don't share my video. I'm definitely not video friendly. I think I have a face for radio. We'll find out. I'm on a podcast. We'll find out if I have a face for radio or not. But the point being is that it's so easy to get burned out in this process and not find what we really are looking for. We spend so many hours in Zoom meetings. Are things getting accomplished? We are communicating more, but are we listening more? And that's a challenge for a Zoom meeting. Definitely a challenge for a Zoom meeting. So, how about you? You zoomed out yet? This week, from the creepy technology desk, how about deep nostalgia? So, a service is taking old family photos and animating them for you. So, is that kind of creepy or what? I think it is, but you'd have to see it for yourself. Basically, if you go out and Google deep nostalgia, AI, and old family photos, and you'll find there's a genealogy site, MyHeritage, that is animating old family photos. It's taking kind of an amalgamation of multiple images and creating the illusion that the person in the picture is going from a frown to a smile, perhaps, if you have pictures of that, or just showing their eyes moving just a little bit. And so these are pictures that may or may not after you've been doctored through AI, artificial intelligence, may not really match the reality that was ever known. Maybe this person was never happy, or maybe they were. But these pictures just kind of creepy just a little bit. It's kind of like Saturday Night Live. So, you know, Saturday Night Live in between different segments would always have pictures of the, you know, the current host or the band, and they were still images. And then they started doing kind of animated GIF flavored images between these sets. And I was a little disconcerted the first time I saw that. And so I didn't really like that. I've gotten used to it now, so it's not such a problem. But here, now we're looking at pictures that are doing the same thing. And I'll post links on the site to this so that you can go find this for yourself so you can take a look. But do we need our old family photos animated? I guess that's just something we have to think about. That's it for this week, guys. This is, it's been great to get back started. And yes, I know this episode's a little disjointed, trying to figure out where we go from here. I'm kind of wanting to reinvent this in some ways, and yet in some ways I want to keep the old flavor. And I really appreciate that you guys have continued to listen to the podcast. Here we are. This is season 3. This is episode 1. And I'm excited so much to see you guys. Thank you so much for listening. And I look forward to talking to you next week. Thanks and bye.